Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa.
Namo tassa means the state, bhagavato means blessedness. Arahato has five meanings, most of which I can't remember right now, but my favorite one is breaking the spokes that turn the wheel of becoming. Sama fully sambuddhassa awakened. I mean the state of awakening. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. So we are talking about.
Is there a Chenrezig here?
Yes,
Chenrezig right here.
Right here.
Right here.
Yeah.
Behind the yellow.
We're talking
door.
About the. Do you want to just move the the yellow and put it on the one below? Yeah. About the Chenrezig meditation, who is the deity of four arms. He is the symbol of true compassion, because true compassion is made of the qualities of both outer relative truth and inner absolute truth. Now, the rest of the time, we're working our way up to that level. I don't think there's anybody in this room has already achieved that level. If so, you can give the class. Cause relative truth is subject-object duality. Absolute truth is transcendent. So when you have an experience, and when there is an experience of transcendence, and then there is still existence, you might be able to appreciate the Buddha saying, I too use concepts, but I'm not fooled by them. If I say to you, doorknob, does something come into your mind? Do you think you all have the same doorknob come into your mind?
No.
Who's right? In relation to you, you're right. It's relative. Is it absolute? If you're a physicist, it's molecules, if you're a chemist, it metals, a glass. Is that true? Mm-hmm. If you're a kid who's locked the door and doesn't want anybody to come in, it's my way. Hold your mom. Is that true? Mm-hmm. It's always in relation to the emotion or the circumstance. They call it the causes and conditions of the observer. Mm. Now, have you ever noticed that there are many types of doorknobs? Yeah? Good. An observant group. And when there are these many different types of doorknobs, do you sort of have a general vague sense of doorknob, but not really a particular type when I say the word doorknob? Mm. And then if you're frustrated by a doorknob, is it one that your groceries are full and you can't get it to?
Now that you mention it.
And when you're really happy about a doorknob, is it one of those ones where you just sort of touch it and it slides open and then you touch the door and it closes gently? So not only that, but doorknobs for each of us is relative. Isn't that fascinating? When I'm in a good mood, that's one Cecily. Mm-hmm. When I'm pissed off about traffic, that's a whole other Cecily. Mm-hmm. When I'm really happy that I caught myself being pissed off and decided not to be, that's a whole other Cecily. Mm-hmm. Will the real Cecily please stand up? There's this immediate fight as the thousands of them start trying to stand up, because it depends on the causes and the conditions, which self is going to be present in the moment. That's why in Buddhism they say there is no inherent, no fixed identity. Depending on the causes and conditions, the identity changes. Good day, and then suddenly it's not a good day. Bad day, and then suddenly it's not a bad day. Ho-hum. Ho-hum. So you could say that depending on the theme of what you're going through, let's say Christmas shopping for next year, because now the March sales are coming up and I want to have my presents before I go to Hawaii. But the first page you open has this kind of thought to it. And the theme continues, but then the next thought or the next is a different pop-up self, and then the next one is a different pop-up self. And the next one is a different pop-up self. And next one is a different color. So he's carrying on his right hand a rosary. And it has 108 beads, which represent the 108 mind states that they sometimes number. Sometimes it's 52, sometimes it's 50, sometimes it's 100, sometimes it's 108. Depending on, you know. Oh, don't care. It doesn't matter, really. You don't care. Okay, so 108 different mind states. And what is it that is making them a continuum is the thread. It's the thread that matters. The thread is essentially your habitual patterns of emotion. If you develop a habitual pattern of kindness, then, you know, threads are also made of little pieces, aren't they? They're sort of... Aren't they? So even that, if you mostly try to create a pattern of kindness, that starts threading the different mind states together. That changes. The I that arises has more of a sense of one fixed intention. It's not dependent on whether the window is open or closed or somebody sneezed in the next alley or... That's interesting, isn't it? That's called loving kindness. That's what Chinmayee is holding the rosary for. To say, each moment there is the intention to practice kindness for this, from this mind state to this mind state to this mind state to this mind state. The continuum of consciousness. Having done that, you know what happens? There is just a strong sense of being in the present. When you're open, in a kind way, aren't you present? You're smelling a flower for the first time. You're looking at horseshit on your shoe for the first time. It's quite amazing how it just spreads like that. There's no yes or no about it. There's no right or wrong or good or bad. There's just an open presence. When you're in love with someone, like a grandkid or something, you know? Isn't that what it's like, an open presence? Mm-hmm. Or music. When you're in love with something, isn't that just an open presence? Mm-hmm. It's just this quality of the taste of the moment. Kindness, that's what kindness is. Being. Present. Trusting your life, not doing past and future. Not worried about the right answer, or should you have said, or blah, blah, blah. That makes sense, I'm hoping. So having established that that's kindness, then in this hand he's holding what? What's he holding in that hand?
A lotus.
A lotus. How does a lotus grow?
In the mud.
Represents compassion, because you can't be compassionate until you suffer. And you can be compassionate until you suffer and then realize it's a mind state and it's impermanent. And you get caught in the suffering. You're not experiencing suffering. You're experiencing your dislike of suffering, which is quite different. There's a huge difference. So we'll do it again. Everybody got two arms?
Mm-hmm.
Take your left arm and put it up in the air. Move your sleeve up more. Take your right hand and pinch your left arm really, really skin. Really, really pinch it. And really pay attention and dislike it. Really dislike it. Really pay attention. Keep pinching harder. Dislike it. Okay, good. Shake it. Okay, now take your right arm and your left hand and really, really pinch it. Pinch it. Pinch the sucker. Pinch it. And at the same time, pay attention to what it feels like right between your shoulder blades. Keep pinching, but really think, just like, what does that feel like? Is there a space there? Who's that? What's this energy like behind me? Okay.
Wow.
Which feels worse?
Wow.
The left.
Huh?
That's amazing.
Is it different? Is it different?
It's profoundly different.
It's profoundly different. What's different? When there is suffering and you dislike it, you freeze it and make it worse.
Like amplify it.
Way. I say 20 times, but that's probably an under-exaggeration. When you dislike something, you make the pain worse. When you're present in the moment and you are present and you allow the feeling to dislike to be present, but you put your focus on a neutral spot, you're not disliking the pain. You're not making it worse. You all felt that, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the third time? Do you think you remember it this time? It's your first time in the... Oh. You can try
to
keep
looking at the bruises.
Oh, why does that still hurt?
I don't like that bruise.
Because when you realize that suffering is impermanent, you're not disliking it, you're not freezing it. So here it is in the mud, this seed, and it starts growing, so the mud is no longer so powerful. It's in muddy water, and this stem comes up. And then that's impermanent too. It goes above the water and puts out leaf branches. And then lotus. The whole story is compassion. It's impermanent. Suffering is impermanent. The mud is impermanent. The muddy water is impermanent. The blossoming is impermanent. Don't cling to it either. Don't get caught. Keep the mind neutral. When you appreciate that, then you have real compassion. When you're with someone who is suffering, you can share their suffering with them while you're present, knowing not to dislike it, and being in a state of being neutral, and feeling the air, and putting your hand on their back so they feel something that other than just dislike. Not true? If you keep in a neutral space and open to someone else's suffering, it helps them be more neutral. Doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are in the outer world. Those are the relative. The next two has, he's holding this jewel at his heart. He's holding the jewel of his heart, the jewel of his center, this jewel of his complete wisdom, compassion, state being. And this hand is sympathetic joy. What do you know about sympathetic joy? That's a lot. You're right, it's absolute. Sympathetic joy is when you actually see beauty. Mm-hmm. Feel it in yourself. Mm-hmm. Transcend. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Are astounded by the little miracle of breath, of digestion. Mm-hmm. all the different forms of it from it when it goes down to when it comes up. Mm-hmm. Atoms coming in, atoms going out. Yeah. Dandruff, atoms going out, atoms coming in. Continuously interacting, dancing with the entire universe, aren't we? Coming into being, existing, and passing away. Where are the cells you had when you were 7? Any of you got the same cells in your body? Huh? But I just see a show of hands when, yes, I have the same cells in my body as I had when I was 7. Well, who are you? Who are you? Are you then? You know what? When you understand impermanence, you understand sympathetic joy. You understand empathetic joy. The joyousness of just this moment. And the transcendence of everything is continuously changing and blowing and moving. And the ecstaticness of that. They say when you understand impermanence, you truly realize joy. That's a Buddhist, you know, those Zen Buddhists that come up with these weird ideas.
Can you say it again, when you understand?
When you understand, when you really get impermanence, you have the experience of true joy. There's no past or future. There's just this dance in the moment which is continuously changing. There is no self. There is no other. There's just the ecstasy of being.
So one is experiencing that ecstasy, but there is no self.
The cells. The entire body is no longer a self. The entire outer body is no, there's no inner outer. All formation, there's just blissful joyfulness. Did you ever watch somebody get something, somebody that you really love, watch them get something that they really wanted? What was that feeling like? Were you aware of yourself? Not really. You were feeling them. Mm-hmm. There was this exuberance in you. Okay, magnify that a little bit. Like that. Where's the self there? There's no need for a self when you're being. Only when there's past and future, or trying to, I want to understand, is there a self. Those are relative truths. There is a conceptual world, and we can speak in terms of a self. But you could say, I had so much fun watching you get that. But you know that doesn't even begin to describe the feeling that went through. I too use concepts, but I'm not fooled by them. We tend to use the concepts and get fooled, don't we? What?
You think only totally. Only all the time.
Concepts are like that, aren't they? Is that good for now? Is that a good review? Any questions, answers, comments, or complaints? I say that all the time. Some of the most boring things you hear.
I don't understand absolute. I think I understand relative. But I don't think I understand absolute.
No. It's not something that's understood, it's something that is experienced. Have you ever had an orgasm?
Yeah.
Why are you laughing? Have you ever had an orgasm?
Yes.
Can you recall just that moment? Just right now.
Mm-hmm.
And was there a sense of anything particular? So we call it orgasm. That's nice. That's nice, dear. But the experience is transcending a word, isn't it?
Yeah.
So when you have an orgasm, you're experiencing a transcendent moment. Apparently, when you sneeze, you do. But yeah. So fast, you miss it.
I can see that.
And just as you're falling asleep, it's possible too. No, not everybody does. And when you die, those are the four times you can be sure that it's just going to happen. But for most of us, we think of something that transcends as the next generation of computers or something like that. We think of one better. We don't think of something that stops all judgment of better or worse. Mm-hmm. When you're having a real full-on orgasm, there is no question of better, worse, up, down, good, bad. In the midst of that, there is just the total, complete abandonment of logic, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise you can't have a full orgasm, can you? You have to let go, don't you? Mm-hmm. I just saw the vagina monologues. Did you guys see those? Have you ever seen those?
No.
They're brilliant, eh? I didn't know that the clitoris has more nerve cells in it than any other organ in any other body, including the male penis. Did you know that?
No.
I should have gone to see that movie when I wasn't being celibate. I mean, not as well. I could have explored that a lot more. But anyway, other than that, the quality of an orgasm is the best way I know, because it actually lasts long enough for us to have an inkling of what's going there with that transcendent experience. It transcends subject-object.
That's what absolute is?
That's what absolute is. The relative and the absolute. I think they use the word transcendent too. It transcends duality.
There's no sense of I.
No subject object.
Okay.
And thinking is not the same thing. Damn. Because you're good at it. You're probably good at orgasms too, but that's none of my business.
So would really intense pain be a transcendent thing as well?
It can be, but you would have to not be caught in liking it or disliking it. I think childbirth is transcendent.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yes.
It's like there is nothing else you can do. You just have to let go of all past, all future, and just be right in the moment.
Yeah.
And then all the endorphins get released in your body to make it possible to bear it. And every once in a while you sort of come back and you, why don't you just get out? Go back into the rhythm again. But generally, our orgasm goes one step further because there's still a little bit of a consciousness of itself with pain, isn't there usually? You get a bit of that too, like I told you the story about my friend in Tasmania, in Hobart, who Margaret lived up a hill, and they get big winds in Hobart. It's mostly just, it's a bunch of mountaintops sticking out of the ocean on the end of, outside, just out, off the coast of Australia, they get really big winds there, and she's walking home. She was walking up the hill. It's not that big a city, so everybody mostly walks. She's walking home, and she looks up, and then she is just experiences a picture of this huge form, another picture. It's a slightly different angle. Another picture. Another picture, And then something in her, the adrenaline starts after about 7 or 8 or 9 pictures. And she says, she has this feeling, get out of the way. And she runs off the road, and somebody's tin roof had blown off. And it was being blown, turning over and over. A full tin roof blowing down the middle of the road. But because she'd never seen a tin roof blowing down the middle of the road before, there was no way. When we see something, we don't see, you don't see my hand moving. You see picture, 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 picture. But your brain, your eye sends that information. Does this sound anything like a CBC, the nature of things? Science of the senses, the eye? Any of you? You did see those programs, didn't you? I showed them to you. And the eye takes the information, sends it to the brain. The brain does a little word search and says, oh, that's a car driving down the road. Or if you're really good, that's a Ford's, you know, year 19. But what you actually see is just shots. If you don't have the information in your brain, then you're just in the moment. You're not going past future. Because there's no past or future to relate. So in a way, you could say that that is close to a transcendent experience.
There's just a knowing without understanding. Just a knowing.
Except it misses the quality of totality of a transcendent experience. Sympathetic joy is seeing everybody is already awakened. The joy. It starts just seeing somebody get what they want. But then it builds and builds. When you see all beings are the Buddha, all places are nirvana, all sounds are the divine sound. A sympathetic joy at its fullest. Because in fact, enlightenment isn't something you get. It's something you quit covering up. That's the teaching in Buddhism. You're already saved. You just got too much dirt on the floor to see past the flood marks. So the quality of sympathetic joy is that feeling of the joy of seeing the beauty of everyone, everywhere, inner, outer, self, other. Good day, bad day, what? There's no such thing. It's just the moment. Dancing, dancing, dancing. And the joy of that. The joy of that. And it's especially easy when somebody you love gets something, isn't it? That's the easiest. And you sort of like spread it out from there. Is that reasonable? So sympathetic joy is like beginning to understand enlightenment or understand transcendence. Beginning to understand the ecstatic. Ecstatic. Dervish. It's dervish. Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints, or is that good for now? Yeah. Okay. Okay. So, of course, before I move on to equanimity, I want to read this again. I'm packing. I'm getting renos. By the way, I have a huge hole dug outside my kitchen door, and my kitchen door is taped shut, and the porch is gone. And when it really snowed, I thought, boy, if it snows for 6 days really hard, And then it Chinooks for 4 days. Maybe I'd have a swimming pool out there so I could force the door open. For the first time in my life, I have my own swimming pool. They've actually put in some planks there and are going to pour concrete. Amazing, eh? There is nothing wrong with the world. When I'm packing, I'm finding all these notebooks and things that are from years ago, because I'm a notorious notebook keeper. This isn't my writing, this is Catherine Boudreau's. This is something she read to me once, and I said, write it out for me. This isn't a notebook, this is my writing. She's much neater. There's nothing wrong with the world. What's wrong is the way you look at it. It is your own imagination that misleads you. Without imagination, there is no world. Your conviction that you are conscious of a world is the world. Is that true? Or your conviction that you are conscious of your world? That's you, that's the world. The world you perceive is made of consciousness. What you call matter, now he takes a leap, is consciousness itself. You are the space in which it moves, the time in which it lasts, the love that gives it life. Cut off imagination and attachment, and what remains? See it as it is, not through the screen of desire and fear, like and dislike. Everything moves according to its nature. Where is the need of a policeman? Every action creates a reaction which behaves, which balances and neutralizes the action. Everything happens, but there is a continuous canceling out. And in the end, it is as if nothing happens. It's beeping for some reason.
Sorry, someone has an alarm.
Was it time to get up?
It's 8:12, or it's now. I'm not sure which.
Break jacket is now.
Did you show him that?
Yeah, he saw.
The reality is indefinable and indescribable. And that's what they say in the Tibetan tradition when they talk about, you know, that whatever you see is illusory because it's dependent on the seer. And they say to the, it is without fixed identity and it is ineffable, indescribable. The reality, it is neither there nor not there. And the true nature is ineffable, indescribable. The reality is indefinable and indescribable. The objective universe has structure, is orderly and beautiful. But structure, pattern, plan imply constraint and compulsion. The world is absolutely free. Everything in it is self-determined. Order comes spontaneously and immediately because of its timelessness. The point of now, it gives momentary being, a fleeting sense of reality. In full awareness, contact is established. It needs effortless, unself-conscious attention. In Buddhadharma, in the Thai tradition, Buddhadharma, who was one of the beautiful teachers that I had the good fortune to study with, he used to teach that when you got to the point where you could see the when you could see the seeing, you could see seeing the breath, then begin to look for the seer. That's fine. It requires effortless, unselfconscious attention. There is nothing wrong with our world. It's our thinking of ourselves separate from it that creates disorder. I like that sentence. I think I'll read it again. There is nothing wrong with our world. It is our thinking ourselves separate from it that creates disorder. No distinction between body and universe. Each is the cause of the other. Each is the other in truth. The notion, I see, I feel, I think, I do, must disappear from the field of consciousness. What remains when the false is no more is real. Without love and will inspired by love, nothing can be done. Merely talking about reality without doing anything about it is self-defeating. There must be love in the relation between the person who says, I am, and the observer of that I am. The observer considers himself apart from the observed. It is only when the observer accepts the person as a projection or manifestation of himself, and so to say, takes the self, small s, into the self, large s. The duality of I and this goes in the identity of the outer and the inner. And the inner, the supreme reality, manifests itself. This union of the seer and the seen happens when the seer becomes conscious of himself as the seer. He is not merely interested in the seen, which he is anyhow, but also interested in being interested, giving attention to attention, aware of being aware. Affectionate awareness is the crucial factor that brings reality into focus. Awareness comes from the supreme and pervades the inner self. Already there. The so-called outer self is only that part of one's being of which one is not aware. Okay. Awareness comes from the supreme and pervades the inner self. The so-called outer self is only that part of one's being of which one is not aware. The body defines the outer self, consciousness, the inner. You see me smoking. Find out for yourself, how did you come to see me smoking? And you will easily realize that it is your I am the body state of mind that is responsible for this I see you smoking idea. Go beyond your concepts and ideas. In the silence of desire and thought, the truth is found. Earnestness is the golden key. Mm. That lovely?
Mm. Who wrote that first one?
I can't remember. I have a feeling I know, but I'm not sure, so I won't tell you. It sounds like a couple of people to me. So she didn't write who had said it.
Probably put in Google.
Yeah. But it's very, very much to the point of like transcendent, the transcendent states, sympathetic joy and equanimity. And equanimity is when you realize that there is no different, there is no differentiation between inner and outer, self and other. Mm-hmm. Totally empty, empty. The empty of fixed identity in every sense. There's a whole totally different quality, and it's, I think, impossible to speak of. It starts by looking at your preferred separatenesses. In the Theravadin tradition, you do the meditation on equanimity by sitting and saying, may I be well and happy, may I be free of enmity, free of disease and grief, may happiness be my guard. May I be well and happy, may I be free of enmity, disease and grief, may happiness be my guard. May I be well and happy, may I be free of enmity, disease and grief, may happiness be my guard. And you just do three breaths, just feeling your heart center. And you see about four feet in front of you, to your right, your very best friend. God, you love them. Man, they're great. They have such good taste because you're their best friend too. Right there. And they just look so, they look like they're so excited to see you. Oh, and about the same distance, but over just slightly to your left, there's your best enemy. The person who has the good fortune to, bad fortune to not see how wonderful you are. Obviously they have some real problems, however, that's their problem, not yours, and you don't want to know about it. And there they are, they're really absolutely being just exactly the last person you would want to talk to. You're doing it really, really well, too. And right in between, there's some neutral person, some sales clerk, and a bus driver. Totally neutral. And you just see the three people. And then you look at the person you really love. And then you say, what were they doing at noon yesterday? And you just make something up if you don't know. What was I doing at noon yesterday? Just remember. Or make something up if you can. What was our relationship? What were they doing 2 days ago at noon? What was I doing 2 days ago at noon? What was our relationship? What were they doing 3 days ago at noon? What was I doing 3 days ago at noon? What was our relationship? What were they doing 4 days ago at noon? What was I doing 4 days ago at noon? What was our relationship? What were they doing 5 days ago at noon? What was I doing 5 days ago at noon? What was our relationship? What were they doing 6 days ago at noon? What was I doing 6 days ago at noon? What was our relationship? What were they doing 7 days ago at noon? What was I doing 7 days ago at noon? What was our relationship? Then you go 2 weeks. Then you go 3 weeks. Then you go 4 weeks. Then you go 2 months. Then you go 3 months. And you go 6 months, What were they doing 6 months ago at noon? What was I doing 6 months ago at noon? What was our relationship? Then you go a year. Then you go 2 years. 3, 4, 5, 10, 15, 20, 25. Go back down to when you were a year old. They were a year old, whichever would be first. Then you go back to 6 months, 3 months, 2 months, 1 month, weeks. Then you go to when they died. And then you go to before they died. What was our relationship? Before they were born. What was our relationship? Then you're the person you hate. Oh, who has the bad taste to hate you? What were they doing yesterday? What was I doing yesterday? What was our relationship? You do the same thing, one day at a time for a week. 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, 6 days, 7 days. 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. 1 month, 2 months, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, 6 months, 1 year. 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, etc. Like that. What's our relationship? To whichever one of you is the oldest or the youngest to your birth. And before that. What were they doing? What was I doing? Then you go to the neutral one. Do it exactly the same. You get a feeling of what might happen if we were going to do that in detail tonight. Mm-hmm. Then at the end, when you've done all three, then you have all three merge into one. And they merge into you, or you merge into them. Doesn't matter. And that's how you do the practice of equanimity. Isn't that beautiful? Mm. That's how I was taught it. Mm. What do you think?
It's impossible.
You have to just be willing to make it up.
Yeah.
As soon as you start trying to be right, you're full of shit.
Yeah.
But you just see what comes up.
Yeah. Yeah, quite quickly there becomes
no. You don't even know what you were doing a year ago. Yes.
No. Yeah.
But you can have, okay, well, it's likely I was.
Yeah.
You give yourself a little bit more time than I did at the beginning, but not much more. And you just keep the pace going. I suggest you all try that practice.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
You realize it's not real.
Huh?
None of it's real. Like, it's just a. You realize.
Have you done it yet?
Well, I just did it.
No, you didn't do it. I went through it sort of very quickly, not giving the time to.
Well, I was thinking. I love my mother, but yesterday at noon, I guess I have to imagine what I felt about her.
My mother isn't really the best person to choose. Be a best friend is better.
Okay.
Mothers are both our most loved and our most hated, aren't they? Do they just bug us?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm? Does your mother bug you sometimes?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. So that's not such a good thing. I mean, we forgive our good best friend for bugging us because, after all, they just had a bad day. But our mother... Excuse me. I pay you to love me. What's your problem? Does that help?
Mm-hmm.
Did you find that interesting?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you say what's when you go, what's our relationship? Is that another thing that you're?
Well, they're my best friend, or they're my best enemy, or they're my best neutral person. And does that change over time?
Mm-hmm.
And it generally does. But you play with it. You see what you get from it. It's very valuable,
little tool to play with.
Especially if you find someone sparks you off.
Mm-hmm.
Very valuable. Especially merging them all into one and then all of that being merged into one, dissolving into you, you dissolving into them, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So all of it dissolving. How am I doing?
Right on time.
Oh, okay, beautiful. Don't you think so, Lord Buddha? Yes, he said. This too shall pass, he said. Any final questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
So the what's our relationship does change as you go back?
I don't know. You'll have to find out. You're always asking a question. You're not putting a stamp on them.
Mm.
Before you met them, what were they?
Yeah.
What was our relationship? Good question.
Mm-hmm. Kind of reminds me of, like, retreat romances, or like you'll be in a retreat, and I heard someone articulate it much better than I can, but you'll be in a retreat and you're with lots of people, you're a silent retreat, so you don't have any interaction with them, but hey, that person's really good looking, and you go off in this fantasy, you all of a sudden you're married, you're on the beach on your honeymoon, then you're divorced, then you know, it's like it's all in your, this drama that's happening in your mind. So with a best friend or enemy over, if you look at it on a long view like that.
Yeah, you can see why it develops equanimity. Mm-hmm. You stop being quite so, you know, stuck in your own rightness. It's just even remembering your own past, going back, you know, or even pretending to remember it. Going back 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that adequate sufficiency then?
Mm-hmm. It really makes me wonder what memory actually is.
Why don't you wonder what reality is, and then I could answer you in the way David Bowie.
Reality is the thing you think about.
Do you know who David Bohm is? A great physicist. He was one on the team who was hired by the United States government to build, and they built the atom bomb, and then afterwards he went as the president with most of the people on that team and begged him not to ever use it, make sure that it was never used because of its destructive power. And that was in the days of the House Un-American Activities in the States. So he became an object for the HUAC, House Un-American Activities. Was basically unable to work or get a job, risk going to jail. So he left, went to Israel, met his wife there. Was teaching physics at a university in Israel, and then went to England. And was one of the great physics, quantum theory. He's written some of the best books on textbooks that are still used. Great being, and I had the good fortune many years ago. My friend Bert McGinnis said to me that he was talking to someone who said that David Bohm was looking for places that he could go and teach in North America. And he wondered whether the Dharma Center would be interested, and I said, well, yes, they are. And then I went and told the Dharma Center that they were interested, and got it arranged, and he came and spent 3 weeks there teaching. Wow. I taped all the talks, but I lent the tapes to someone and they never gave them back. But I made copies for everybody that was there, so I'm in Ontario next month April. I'm going to see if I can find a set of them and maybe be able to, put them onto a computer or something and be able to. But a great being, he died a few years ago. And during every break, he and his wife came. His wife was one of the most lovely people. And I got to give him foot massages every day. We talk about all kinds of stuff. Bring them meals, and they'd always insist I eat with them. And he's talking about reality, and the word reality comes from the root R-E-S. The thing in law is called res, R-E-S. The word thing comes from the root R-E-S. Think comes from the root R-E-S. So being the word fanatic that I am, you know how I love word origins, most of you know that. I'm sitting there in the class, and he says, reality is the thing you think about. You still hear his voice saying that. So. Reality is the thing you think about. We presume it's all separate. No thinker, no thought, nothing. Which door knock? Is that an adequate sufficiency, ladies and gentlemen?
Nice way to bring it back round.
So you notice this extremely beautiful gold light in your hearts is absolutely pulsating with joy. Bubbling up and down. You can feel it through the back and the front and the up and the down and the in and the out and around and around. And it starts spreading light. Light goes up to your shoulders and down to your pelvic bowl. Down your arms, down your legs, up your head bone. Spreads through your whole body. Goes out your pores, fills this room. Just feel this room. This gold light is dancing everywhere. The house, the neighborhood, the city, Western Canada. This moves out through the holy world, throughout the universe, above, below, in front, behind, right, left, four quarters. And just temporarily just causes a sense of bubbling joy and everything. And you think whatever holds me has begun, they are coming together. We share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. So thank you for your great compassion. Thank you. Thank you.